Come on.
From the kingdom of from the kingdom of and the island of your mom. I may keep that in there. Who disrupts
my coronation? Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it! These babies just saved this lame death party!
From the Kingdom of Guelph in the County of Wellington, it is I, your late night, or afternoon, depending on when you listen to this podcast, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I am joined by my ever faithful co-host as we ride the airwaves of, well, sound. I am joined with
Mr. Christopher, bringing you some sound from coast to coast.
That's right. Today's show is dedicated in loving memory, in memoriam, to one of the biggest inspirations I have ever had as a broadcaster, as an on-air personality, and very much part of Twig's message of, we'll listen to anybody, we won't mock you. Who am I talking about? The guy himself from the Kingdom of Nye across the high deserts of Nevada. I'm talking about Art Bell, born in 1945, and died just this past year, 2018. Actually, died on Friday the 13th, and I can't think of a better day for a guy like that to pass away. And we'll talk a little bit more about Art Bell in our weird news segment, which we're going to dedicate to Art Bell, kind of talking about him, also giving you some weird news, because that's what we're going to do. But today's show will be This Week in Geek, Twig, as you've come to know us in the last couple of months. And we're going to flavor the show in Coast to Coast AM style. So you'll be hearing bumper music from Coast to Coast AM as we transition out of our different segments that we're going to be doing this week. And up on the show this week, we will be getting to my review of Far Cry 5 from Ubisoft. We're also going to take a visit into Satan's Pantry, as we often do. Alex will be joining us remotely, talking about his impressions of the Netflix series Lost in Space. In terms of what we're going to bring you in the news, I'm going to be talking about a video game high score that has been stricken from the history books due to scandal. And of course, it wouldn't be, well, the weird news without something involving the end of the world and good old Planet Nibiru. What do you got?
Well, for news, I want to talk about gaming as well. The loot box controversy continues as fines are starting to be issued in certain places for shady practices. And in weird news, I have the most Canadian motorcycle gang prank I've ever heard.
So, to kind of bring a little bit of levity this week, as we record this show, we're recording this on Sunday, April the 15th. We are currently experiencing what is being called by forecasters a historic ice storm here in southern Ontario. And what that means is, well, we have freezing rain and ice pellets, which is causing ice to accrete pretty much on every conceivable surface. Actually, my wife and our friend Kelly went to Walmart this morning, and the ice had gotten so bad at the local Walmart that one of the doors had broken. And I was impressed because my wife had sent me a picture of that, and the door is literally hanging by like a single hinge.
I don't even know how that works. Like, ice accretion, you'd think it was just going to freeze everything shut, but it's breaking stuff.
Yeah, like, it's weakening down things. Like, last night, now me and Blair and Tristan, we all live in the same building, and we live on a very busy road. Last night, it was a ghost town, like, past 6 p.m. Like, literally, you could hear nothing. There was no cars out on there. I heard one plow, I think around 11, go out last night. And it was weird. Like, we saw our lights flicker a few times. We're fully expecting to lose power at some point this afternoon. So we are stocked up with all sorts of supplies. Some good for you, some not so good for you. Don't worry, most of it's diet friendly. And that's what we're currently dealing with here in southern Ontario.
So if Elsa, if you're out there listening, please stop.
Yeah, for the love of Christ, please. Also coming up later on this week, we're going to be getting back to the Cambridge Chronicles. We'll be recording more live episodes, which will be exciting. Looking forward to doing more D&D. Watched a movie last night. I can't tell you what it was because it would give away what I'm going to do. But my God, Tristan, I am so excited, like stupid excited for this. So anyway, guys, we are going to throw things to myself and my review of Far Cry 5. We'll be back right here on Twig Coast to Coast. Far Cry 5 is the latest installment in the long-running Ubisoft series, and today we're looking at, obviously, the newest entry, which I'll be reviewing on the Xbox One. Far Cry 5 takes place in America this time, actually, of all places, so not the Himalayas or the far South Pacific, but no, literally right in our own backyard of the fictional Hope County, Montana, and we find ourselves fighting a villainous cult known as Eden's Gate, and we're fighting a guy known as the Father. And, well, a good way to sum this game up would be Duck Dynasty Murder Simulator, simply because you're fighting rednecks and cultists. And it's kind of weird, because these are the type of people you would actually rather run into in your everyday life if you happen to live in this part of America. I'm not saying crazy cultists or anything, but you know, those typical salt of the earth, rednecky, pickup trucks, you know, that sort of thing. Sort of the places where I grew up as a child, and though I remember a lot less assault rifles, the point still stands. So you're fighting this evil cult, and because it's a Far Cry game, it means there's hunting and other sorts of weirdness. Allow me to tell you about some of my adventures. I have chased a turkey through a field with a flamethrower and set the entire field ablaze trying to kill said turkey. The other night I killed a moose with a rocket launcher and sent it flying. Couldn't find the body to loot it, but oh boy did I kill it. I have killed bears with pistols. I have kicked wolverines to death. And I'm pretty sure I've beaten a cougar to death with a shovel. These are just some of my adventures I've had in Far Cry 5. Plus, oh yeah, I also managed to drive a jet ski a significant amount onto land. I'm actually rather impressed that I actually did that. So, fun times for me. So, Far Cry 5, as I said, outside of being a wonderful sandbox that you can play in with helicopters and planes, and my God, is flying in this game fun, you can also do other things. There's something called Far Cry Arcade. What is that? Well, that's something where you can actually do multiplayer for this game, and, you know, your typical deathmatch, whatever. But if you were willing to spend the time, you can actually build your own levels, which is actually something kind of neat. People have built in levels out of Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2. I've seen a Resident Evil level. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. In fact, I would love to see someone build like Shadow Moses Island from Metal Gear or something like that. Or someone to build Nuketown from Call of Duty, Modern Warfare. Stuff like that you can easily do here, which is phenomenal. Now, you can also play this game single player and co-op as well. I didn't get a chance to play co-op simply because nobody was awake at the times that I was playing, and these are my sandbox, these are my toys, go get your own. But you do have the option to do that with, I think, as up to as many as 6 of your friends. Don't quote me on that number, but it's definitely more than 2. So can I recommend Far Cry 5? Absolutely. I think this is a wonderful Far Cry sandbox game. There's a lot of fun to be had with the actual game itself being the weirdly fun open world sandbox. The storyline's kind of cool with the cult. You can battle different cult leaders as you go through the game to try and work your way up to fighting the father to free Hope County. Far Cry Arcade, I think, has a lot of potential, especially if you're willing to spend the time to build really cool levels. And the Far Cry experience is here. If I did have anything negative to say, it's not as memorable as, say, Far Cry 3's Voss, or even the bad guy from Far Cry 4. But the father is a serviceable bad guy, if I did have one complaint. But overall, Far Cry 5 is a fantastic game. You should check it out on Xbox One, PS4, and PC.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, sword and pistol by my side.
Welcome back to East of the Rockies, first time caller line. You can reach us at 817-717-7202. No subject is too taboo, but of course that brings us to the news this week. And of course it was an exciting week happening in the world of nerd, geek, and dork and or doofus. And one of the big things I want to talk about this week, huge controversy if you are a fan of the video game world, and that is, if you remember, about 10 years ago, it's really been a long time, there was a little documentary, you may remember, called King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. And it sort of brought the competitive, I wouldn't call it underground scene, but not well represented scene of competitive video gaming. And it featured Steve Wiebe, who is like a teacher from, I want to say, the upper Midwest or upper middle... States. Somewhere. Shut up. Somewhere. Actually, I think he's a friend of my Facebook, actually. And he was competing against the Hot Sauce King, Billy Mitchell, and they were competing over a little-known Nintendo game called Donkey Kong. And it was literally who had the first million point score, who would reach the kill screen in Donkey Kong. The kill screen in Donkey Kong is where you progress through the entire game, loop back to the first level, and then the game glitches out because it can't understand that you've reached so many points, and the game just says, nope, I'm done now.
It was something built into a lot of old arcade games. The game was intended to be difficult. It was intended to increase in difficulty to the point where it would become impossible to beat. The problem is that people like to take that as a challenge accepted moment and will continue to get better and eventually beat those levels, going beyond the thresholds of the original programming and breaking shit.
Exactly. So it was recently discovered and that Twin Galaxies, which is a website that tracks high scores, like be it Galaga, Frogger, Centipede, all those classic arcade games. I think they do modern-ish stuff. I think I've got a few friends that hold records in a couple different games. But anyway, they decided last week that they were officially stripping Billy Mitchell of his high scores. And he's banned from submitting scores to the world's largest tracker, which is Twin Galaxies. So Twin Galaxies says this, and I quote, "With this ruling, Twin Galaxies can no longer recognize Billy Mitchell as the first million-point Donkey Kong record holder. According to our findings, Steve Wiebe would be the first million-point record holder. The decision comes after months of..." Now, this is more from the article from Variety.com. The decision comes after months of research by the administrators of Twin Galaxies, which tracks world gaming records and helps the Guinness Book of World Records validate gaming scores, according to a statement released by the group Thursday morning. The group writes in a statement released that Mitchell's famous Donkey Kong score of 1,047,200 was not achieved on an arcade machine, a requirement for Twin Galaxies and Guinness, but rather through the use of emulation software. The rules for submitting scores for the original arcade Donkey Kong competitive leaderboards require the use of an original arcade hardware only. The use of MAME or any other emulation software for submission to these leaderboards is strictly forbidden. Now, it's funny, if you go and watch the King of Kong documentary, they actually shoot the board. They show the actual arcade PCB board showing that, okay, this is original arcade hardware. It has not been tampered with. And the entire documentary tracks Steve Wiebe trying to beat this score and be the King of Kong, so to speak. And Billy Mitchell goes to this arcade up in New Hampshire. I can't remember what it's called, but I know me and Blair wanted to go there for our wedding. Shut up! Friggin' phone. I love what it looks like on the waveform, by the way. Anyway, continuing on. So anyway, he basically submits a videotape. He's like, oh yeah, I beat this. And it's funny because people just didn't notice it for years because there's a way that the screen interlaces. Like, because it's older arcade hardware, how it builds the image on screen is built in a different way. If it's through MAME, it's a computer, which means it builds its images differently as well. So it's not perfect emulation. Something somebody eventually noticed, but it just went unnoticed for years. And Billy Mitchell's a scumbag anyway. He's such a shit talker on Twitter. There's a guy from Twin Galaxies, a guy, I think his name was Walter Day, the referee, who's like, oh yeah, Billy Mitchell's a great guy. Would constantly defend his scores and say Steve Wiebe can't touch it. Now, this score has been crushed several times, but having Wiebe recognized as the officially first Donkey Kong record holder is a big deal, and I'm kind of glad Billy Mitchell has been stripped of his titles and can't submit anything else.
It's bizarre to think that there's the potential for corruption in such a niche environment and in such a scene that's probably fairly small compared to some other areas.
Yeah. I mean, sure, there's money to be made here, but not enough to make a difference.
I have to wonder how much effort went into this fake fraud, for lack of a better way to put it. Did he put money into this? How much effort did it take? Is it really worth it?
No, like, not at all. Literally, he gets bragging rights amongst, as you said, a very niche community. A very niche amount of people will give a shit. And sure, it's a boost to his brand because the King of Kong raised his public profile. He got invited to conventions and whatnot. You know, whatever. Hey, that's Billy Mitchell. That's the Donkey Kong guy. But it's... Our friend Kelly is coloring, and she made a really squeaky, funny sound. Live radio, folks. But yeah, it's just, what's the point? I don't get it. Billy Mitchell, you suck.
Don't cheat at anything. There's no point. Cheaters never prosper. It's a phrase for a reason. You don't actually get that sense of accomplishing anything if you cheated your way to get there.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, you beat someone else, but you didn't really do it.
Yeah, you didn't earn it. You may have the skill, you didn't earn it. So, losers. Loser.
Losers are losers.
Exactly. Winners don't use drugs. Or emulation software.
Emulation is just like a drug.
All right, what do you got for me, Tristan?
Still in the video gaming news and controversy, the loot box controversy is continuing. And there are three game makers from South Korea that are now being penalized for misrepresenting the odds in their loot boxes.
Ooh.
It's not a problem to actually have loot boxes itself, but advertising them as completely random and truly random is misleading if you change the odds to not be equal across all the pieces, and this is where the problem was. Nexon, the company that produced Sudden Attack, had loot boxes with 16 different available pieces. If you collected all 16, you would receive diverse benefits in the game. but Nexon advertised this as the 16 pieces being provided at random, but one of the pieces had 0.5% chance to drop. So that's not truly random. And one user actually spent more than $350 to get all 16 pieces. Netmarble also had a loot box problem in their game Monster Taming, where you could get a rare monster. The chances were advertised as being under 1%, but it was actually 0.0005% chance to get this specific monster. It's still technically under 1%, but it's really misrepresenting. It's misleading. The Fair Trade Commission in Korea had... okay, I kind of screwed that up. I'm going to edit it. I lost my place there.
All right, hold on. Oh, no, that's fine. Welcome to live radio.
Exactly. The Fair Trade Commission in Korea, they said they've had it with these manipulations. They don't like the misrepresentation. So they fined Nexon Korea $884,000 and Netmarble $42,000. Netmarble's accepting their punishments and apologized to their users, but Nexon Korea is now challenging it. Regarding the challenge, they said, "In our puzzle event, we used the phrase random provision to suggest the items would be provided at random and that the odds of obtaining each puzzle piece were different. However, the FTC interpreted the phrase as suggesting equal odds. We plan to work on obtaining an additional review of this issue in the future." So basically they're saying, it's not our fault that you guys didn't understand what we meant by random, even though random technically has a definition as it is. Haha, too bad, we don't accept this punishment yet. We're going to challenge you because you guys are dumb.
Now, I can see both sides of the issue. From a PR and legal standpoint, it was a simple wording problem. But you're right. Random has a definition, a true definition, and these guys shouldn't have maybe used that word when representing the odds to get this particular monster.
There's an increasing push in the global scene for loot boxes to disclose the odds of getting each individual item that are available in loot boxes, and saying that your odds are random without disclosing that, hey, some of this stuff is more rare than others. That's really all it would take.
Yeah.
At this level, but they weren't being clear about that, and so it was manipulative, it's misrepresentative, and there are some very easily influenced people out there that go, okay, well, I only need to get 16 different pieces. I should be able to just do that by buying 16 boxes. That's not how it works.
No.
But that's the mindset of a lot of these users. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair to them as consumers.
No, exactly. I mean, like you just said, I should be able to get 16 different boxes. In theory, it's possible. Not likely.
No, it's very unlikely for that to happen, even if the odds are equal for each thing. That's just not how probability works. But if you have an item that you're expecting a 1 in 16 chance, when in reality it's way under 1%, then that's just not fair.
Yeah, like that one, it was like 0.00005 or something.
A very, very small chance. But you're only advertising that as less than 1%. That is misrepresenting. If I'm hearing less than 1%, I'm expecting 0.5%. I'm expecting 0.9, not 0.005%.
Yeah, exactly. That's just a dick move. And I'm glad that it's Korea that's cracking down on that, because they have a lot of mobile developers over there, a lot of game developers, period.
Yeah,
and the fact that their FTC is cracking down on it, that's good.
Yeah, Korea is a huge gaming market. Korea has a huge community built around gaming. They have so many competitive gamers that come out of Korea. It's just part of their culture. It's ingrained in there. So having such a prominent country in the gaming scene worried about loot boxes and making sure that people are being treated fairly, that sets a good precedent for other areas of the world.
Absolutely. So that's pretty much going to do it for us on this edition of the news. Hopefully you have enjoyed. Once again, we also want to encourage you people to submit stories to us. Typically our deadline is Friday or Saturday, so feedback at thisweekingeek.net. We always encourage you to get in touch with us. And as to flavor the show, you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. We're going to throw things over to the weird news, and we're actually going to get joined by Alex for this briefly in our tribute to radio legend Art Bell. We'll be back here, right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity, but for this week, it should be the flagship of the strange, the weird, but never the truly mocked.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky.
Welcome back to Coast Twig. I am one of your two hosts this morning, this evening, this afternoon, somewhere in time across the great city of Guelph in the Kingdom of Wellington. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and this is our weird news segment, and this is very much the segment of the show we're going to dedicate to our dearly departed friend, Art Bell. But before we do that, Alex wanted to join us and kind of give a flavor to weird news this week, or kind of give us a mini talking point for just a couple of minutes. And without any further ado, I'm going to throw things over to my rotund friendo, Alex.
Okay, boys. So it's the icy, icy, wintry death of April for some strange friggin' reason. It's like a God played a joke on us or something. And it is a complete nightmare out. So that is why I'm not with you two recording, or I'm assuming it's two, unless a third person shows up. I don't know. I think Lee said he was dying of the plague anyway, so it might just be Tristan and Mr. Dodd himself. And if that's the case, then I'm going to give you guys a topic to talk about. How about you guys discuss some of the weirdest subreddits you found on Reddit? Personally, I was going down a rabbit hole with my brother one day, and we found how, you know, there's like third world problems, first world problems. I think one of them said ninth world problems, and there's a whole subreddit specifically to those nth degree world problems, and they end up being these weird twisted things. You'll click on it, it'll be a picture, but it'll morph and look like the most disturbing, nightmarish, I don't know, basically nightmare fuel pictures you can imagine, or deep and dark horrifying stories that you can't tell if they're real or not. But is there any subreddits or any posts that you found that you've read about either on Reddit or other websites that just disturbed you and intrigued you at the same time? I'll leave it to you guys. What do you guys think?
So, strange websites and strange subreddits. I'll admit, I've actually not spent a lot of time on Reddit. It's just not my thing. However, that being said, the few times I had, I did spend like a good 2 hours. I remember someone had told me there was a ghost stories Reddit, or it was strange happenings. And I remember reading it in bed one night, and I was just flipping through the Reddit, and it was all these weird ghost stories, people talking about alien abductions and other out-of-body experiences. And I was like, wow, this is weird. And this is not just the stuff I'd hear on Coast to Coast AM. There are people given really vivid details, and it could have just been people spinning fiction or what have you. But it got strange.
There is a subreddit called No Sleep, which is based around that whole concept. People telling these creepy stories, and they may or may not have elements of truth to them, but the point is they're well-structured, they're well-made, and they're meant to make you feel creeped out.
Just that, a little
that
bit
feeling of you've seen this ghost story, you've read this weird thing, and now you're feeling a little uncomfortable, but that's what you're going there for.
There was one I remember, and it just came to me when you mentioned that. And it talks about Native American skinwalkers. And what a skinwalker is, the best way to describe it would be it's a spirit that wears the flesh of it, be a man or be some kind of an animal, usually a coyote, a wolf, or even some kind of bizarre hybrid in between, like a werewolf or something. And I remember one story I read on Reddit, and it talks about this person was living in, I want to say, Arizona, and there's a lot of Indian reservations like Anasazi or Navajo, whatever. And this person had heard something scratching at their back door. And they're like, well, what the hell is that? And they just figured it was their dog wanting to come in. And they turn, they go to the door, and they see this creature with these fiery coal red ember eyes just sitting at the back door. And it made a sound like a man. And the person's like, what the fuck? And the thing looked them dead in the eyes and then shot across their backyard like a shot. And the thing is, with a skinwalker, if I remember the legends correctly, you're never supposed to engage them. You're never supposed to look them in the eye, because you're basically inviting bad juju. You're inviting bad spirits into your land. And even medicine men, medicine women will tell you there's like skinwalkers are bad news. They're basically evil spirits. Hmm. And do I believe in skinwalkers? Well, I'm Native Canadian, Native American myself, and I've seen a lot of strange things that I cannot explain, mostly ghosts. That's my thing, which means if I'm willing to believe in ghosts, spirits that are not necessarily of the earthly form, it's probably not that far a stretch. But stuff like that, I remember reading, like I said, stuff on Reddit like that, and skinwalker stuff. Actually, there was a skinwalker story that happened in Wainfleet, which is a place near Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada. I remember someone saw a skinwalker out on one of the back lines, and it was just, what have you found on No Sleep?
It's creepy to think about. There's a lot of stories that involve someone doing something rather innocuous. They're not really, they don't start this story with anything you would think anything of, but all of a sudden something's weird, and then it keeps getting worse and it keeps getting worse, and eventually they realize that the simple thing like sending an email to someone, it's not actually who they think it is, and it just starts to infiltrate the rest of their life, and it becomes this multi-part series, and it's really interesting to read about. And it makes you think about just little parts of your life that might not be as mundane as you expect them to be. And it makes you kind of question your beliefs about things, and you question, you know, what is out there that I don't understand? What kind of experiences do I have that aren't just something I can explain easily?
Just like the everyday stuff.
Exactly. Something out there, something a little bit weird that you might kind of brush off, but it makes you think, What if it is something?
And that's kind of where we're going to lead into our discussion about Art Bell. Now, I've mentioned him several times off this show. So to give you a very brief abbreviated history lesson. In fact, Alex has embedded a Larry King interview with Art Bell in this episode post. I really recommend you take the 20 minutes and watch it. But for those of you that don't know, Art Bell was a radio host who used to host a show called Coast to Coast AM. And it started, a precursor started in the 1970s, but it really picked up steam in the 1990s and got syndicated across Clear Channel and Premier Radio Networks. And you'd usually hear it from midnight to 5 a.m. on the AM dial, wherever you were. And he would cover topics like ghosts, UFOs, aliens, demons. But he would talk to people talk about other different conspiracies like chemtrails. Hale Bopp was a big thing there. In fact, there's a very famous story about him taking a picture of something behind the Hale Bopp comet. Did that lead to the suicide of the Hale Bopp cult? Who knows? But there was one of the things Art Bell was also known for was doing interviews with very, very, very famous people like Willie Nelson. He did George Carlin.
I saw an interview with Leonard Nimoy that he did.
Yeah, like there was a lot of things that he did. And he would also interview other people in these fields too. And the ethos, the very much the feeling of Coast to Coast AM is you can come here and be safe. Your message will not be mocked. I will listen, I will ask questions, I will challenge, but I will never openly make fun of you saying you're an idiot. If you truly believe you were abducted by the ghost of Elvis in the middle of the night, then okay, what happened?
He made sure that the listeners understood that his show was meant for the purposes of pure entertainment, but he was always open-minded. I believe he said, the mind should not be so open as the brains to fall out, but not so closed that you can't let anything new in.
Exactly. And the main reason that I am saddened by his death is I spent a vast majority of my high school years listening to, at that time, where I'm from, Owen Sound, Ontario, there was a radio station called AM 560. And they would begin syndicating Art at about midnight. It used to be the Laura Schlesinger Show, and I don't know whether she's still around. Dr. Laura, I think she is. But they'd syndicate Art at midnight. And I remember sitting at my kitchen table with my copy of Weekly World News with Bat Boy, and I'd write to all these really weird people, try and get on all these mailing lists, because it was fun.
That Bad Boy was on every cover of every issue ever.
I loved it.
For years.
Loved Bad Boy. Or like World's Fattest Man Weds World's Fattest Woman. All this like really, really, really weird shit. But I remember listening to Art Bell in my room or at my kitchen table and just being enthralled. That was the genesis for me of like, man, I think I really love radio. And before that, there was a guy I used to know named Gary at the local radio station. He was the DJ on Saturday nights. And I'd always make requests and I'd listen to the radio. And I remember my parents took me to the radio station to go get a tour of it to see what radio was all about. And I kept listening to radio and radio and radio and art. And I remember one night specifically, and this night terrified me. It was a night in, I want to say August, and I had a room upstairs across from my parents. My window's open. I can hear the wind rustling through the trees. It's probably about 2-3 in the morning. And the topic of the evening was electronic voice phenomena. And electronic voice phenomena, for those of you that don't know, is ghost voices that are captured on tape. And sometimes you hear them. They're crystal clear. They're called Class A EVP. And I was very new to this. I mean, I hadn't even been watching. There's a show that used to be on Fox called Sightings, which was very cool. You can actually find full episodes on like YouTube. But anyway, so I'm listening to this expert talk on EVP, and she brings up some of her A-class stuff. She's talking about she went to the cemetery somewhere in the United States. And she's like, and here's a voice that we captured at a cemetery. And you hear the sound of the cemetery. It's quiet. You can hear wind, and you hear the woman's voice come. She's like, is there anything out there that wishes to speak to us? And you just hear something rustle, like as if the microphone's moving. And then you can hear the audio being boosted up, because sometimes these EVPs, you do need to boost them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hear this demonic voice. I'm talking something from the pits of hell. Get out. And I remember my blood running fucking cold. I am 15, 16 years old. I am an expert on horror movies, Freddy Krueger, Jason, Pinhead. This shit should not scare me. But there was something in that recording that knew whatever the fuck that sound was. That was not a special effect. That was not someone playing with a voice. That was something very much from beyond the pits of hell. And that, like I said, just chilled me right to the bone. And I remember listening to Art Bell talk about it. And he's questioning her. He's asking her, well, what do you think it was? And she's like, well, I think it was a very angry spirit, or it was something that was never human at any point during its existence. And I have never forgotten that voice. In 25 years, I can recall that night, that minute, just get out in perfect, perfect detail. So I had you take a listen to Art Bell yesterday, kind of do a little bit of research on him.
Yeah.
What do you think about him?
Yeah, I didn't really listen to him very much through his career. I was aware of his existence, and I like to watch things about the paranormal. I'm somewhat skeptical myself, but I do believe in the paranormal overall. I just look for the mundane solution, the regular solution as to what something might be before I jump to the conclusion that it is something supernatural. But I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
So Art Bell being someone who's willing to listen to people's stories, no matter how outlandish they may seem, how strange or how unlikely, it was a nice and comfortable environment that he created.
Mm-hmm.
And his body of work was just so interesting. His voice is just so soothing.
Yeah, it's so calming.
It's calm. It's slow. It's really peaceful. Considering the subject matter, you're listening to him in the middle of the night, and you're talking about something terrifying, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's very soothing to have him kind of narrate and oversee the entire conversation. I know he did a very famous interview with someone, I believe, that was escaped from Area 51.
Yeah, it was a former employee. And actually, before we get into that, we're going to play the entire audio of that phone call right now. So here is the famous Area 51 call. Then me and Tristan are going to come back and talk about that. And you guys make up your own mind.
Online, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Hi. I don't have a whole lot of time.
Well, look, let's begin by finding out whether you're using this line properly or not.
Area 51.
Yeah, that's right. Were you an employee or are you now?
A former employee.
Former employee.
I was let go on a medical discharge about a week ago, and I've kind of been running across the country. Oh, man, I don't know where to start. They're going to... they'll triangulate on this position really, really soon.
So you can't spend a lot of time on the phone, so give us something quick.
Okay, okay, what we're thinking of as aliens are, they're extra-dimensional beings that an earlier precursor of the, space program made contact with. They are not what they claim to be. They have infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the government knows about them, and there's a lot of safe areas in this world that they could begin moving the population to now, Art.
But they're not doing anything.
They are not. They want the major population centers wiped out so that the few that are left will be more easily controllable.
Discharge.
I started getting...
Some way, something knocked us off the air, and we're on a backup system now.
It's the government, or...
I don't know.
It has to be something, though.
Well, did you hear... Now, you tell me, because you were listening.
That was awful strange.
There was a really weird guy on the air when it went off?
Yeah. Real weird out.
Like, going... Sort of sounding paranoid, schizophrenic.
Like crying and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and how far into the conversation was it when it went off?
Just a couple, about 15, 20 seconds, I'd say.
Oh, you guys you really missed a call then, and I've got a feeling somebody didn't want you to hear it.
Yeah. Because it was really strange. All of a sudden, I'm hearing Mark Furman, and
the network, of course, went immediately to a backup tape while we tried to figure out what blew up here.
Uh-huh.
So that's what you heard happen.
Uh-huh.
And then we're now on a backup link system to be on the air at all right now. So, well, I'm telling you.
Am I on the air right now?
You're on the air right now. Well, you better be, yes.
And
where are you, by the way?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, I called the other night. And I wanted to ask two things.
Real quick.
Well, I wanted to say one thing, and I wanted to ask another.
Real quick.
I wanted to ask if you could play that remote viewing one when you were in, while you go to Egypt.
Yes.
And also, I wanted to know all this stuff about, like, Area 51, if it's, like, the government's trying to put it out there like that, so, like, some other place isn't being... watched as much.
In other words, it's a big decoy. I see what you're saying. Aaron, apparently we'll be back after the news, I think. Sandy Beach here inviting me. Lost all transmit capability on this end here in Nevada. The transmitter went belly up suddenly. for some unknown reason. I've never seen it do this in all the years that we've been on the air. I have never seen the transmitter in this way just simply fail, massively fail, like a massive heart attack or some kind. And so we have gone to a backup system to get the signal to you right now, and I presume it is getting to you right now.
So that was the famous Area 51 call, which has actually gotten into pop culture.
Yeah, one of my favorite musical bands is Tool, and they have a song called Fape Doyed, which is basically this call with some modulation and some music laid over top of it, but the whole concept is to help display this call and just how surreal it is.
And as you heard during that call got taken off the air. It got knocked out. The satellite that was carrying the show from Pahrump, Nevada, just went offline for whatever reason. And when Art got the show back online, they're like, okay, that was weird and we can't explain that. And for years, people have talked about that. And even years later, the guy supposedly called back to the show. And, well, whether it was intentional or it was just a technical glitch that just so happened to happen at the right time, we'll leave that up to you, the listener, to decide whether it's real or not. Art Bell also didn't do a lot of interviews. Like I said, he did the Larry King interview. One thing he did do, though, which is very cool, if you remember a game that came out called Prey, he's the radio host in that game. So you can actually hear all his audio through that, which I think is very, very cool. Now, Art Bell left regular hosting duties of Coast to Coast AM back in 2002, 2003 to a friend of his named George Norrie, who continues to host the show to this very day. The last time Art did a Coast to Coast AM was, I think, in 2010, when I guess was his final retirement. And that was a running gag for so many years. Is Art Bell retired finally? And eventually he moved to like the Philippines with like his second or third wife, because his original wife, Ramona, had passed away in the early 2000s, I think, or very, very late 90s. And he used to do these really neat things called Ghost to Ghost AM, which you can guess what that's about. I think the guy's name was Father Mordecai, and he was a priest who specifically dealt with demonic possession. There were multiple time travelers who'd called into the show. There were people who had called in claiming to be the Antichrist, and a few of them were genuinely disturbing.
Something interesting to point out about his call-ins, with the exception of the years he was in the Philippines due to some regulations there, when he had a caller, it was a live caller. There was no delay. There was no censorship. You would just call in and you would be on the air. He didn't want to filter out anything that people were calling to talk about.
Yeah, and that's, I love that about him. There was never, you never felt constrained. You may be saying some pretty outlandish things, but you were never constrained. And his show, he did Coast to Coast AM. He did Dreamland, which was usually on Sunday nights, which was a little bit different. He had a very big impact on conspiracy radio and late night talk radio. And I am going to miss him more than I realize, just because, like I said, he was just such a part of it. Actually, I can actually feel a little bit of emotion coming out right now. I don't want to. I think a part of me is kind of tearing up right now.
It's a loss to a community that needs people like him in it. It's a loss to people who are looking for a place to talk about these things that they're passionate about, that a lot of people will just look at them sideways and ignore them about.
Yeah.
And having someone that they know they could talk to, they know that would not necessarily believe them, but give them the benefit of the doubt and a place to talk about the things that are on their mind.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't always agree with a lot of Art's politics, but you know what? Politics never ruined his show. It was always entertaining, even if it was from a left-leaning perspective or a right-leaning perspective. You never felt insulted. And the show Coast to Coast AM, now with George Norrie, has kind of lost that. It doesn't feel as memorable as it once was. And not, and I'm not saying George is a bad host, because he's not.
But it's part of the landscape of what radio has become and what just entertainment needs to be now, unfortunately. Everything seems to try to be partisan and tries to be politically charged. It's just 2018. Everything is political now. Nothing is as welcoming or inclusive as it used to be, and that's just something that hopefully we can get back to.
Exactly. So, Art, you will be missed, and as I've said a few times, from the Kingdom of Nye and across the high desert of the Sierra Nevada, you will be missed. So me and Tristan have a couple of weird news stories this week. We're just going to quickly run through them because we've been talking about this way longer than I thought. And we're going to start things off with a story that would make Art smile. Did you know we're all going to die on April 23rd?
Again, we just got over dying last year, I think.
I know, Jesus. So according to this, Planet X, or Planet Nibiru, will destroy the Earth on April 23rd, according to Doomsday Prophecy. If that doesn't happen, the rapture's going to happen.
Although, if you look outside right now here in Guelph, Ontario, you might actually start believing it.
So, according to conspiracy theorist David Mead, he's predicting Planet X, also known as Nibiru, will show up at the end of April, sparking an Armageddon. But don't worry. If this isn't, Mead also predicted Nibiru was going to hit the Earth in September 2017, then in October, and then he's like, all right, hold on, I kind of fucked up. November 2017, don't worry, we're all going to die.
Don't worry, we're all going to die.
So NASA senior space scientist David Morrison has told the Washington Post, no, there's no such thing as a planet called Nibiru. No, it's not a brown dwarf surrounded by planets as alliterations of the claim suggest. No, it's not on a collision course towards Earth. And yes, people should get over it. Now, it's funny because this is not the first time we've heard this. And I've heard of Planet Nibiru, Planet X existing in the outer solar system.
Yeah.
Because there is something causing gravity out there.
They've noticed there is a gravitational tug on the outer planets. They know there's something out there we haven't seen. It's too dim, but it's not having any sort of adverse effect on Earth. It's negligible completely, and it's not colliding with Earth.
Yeah.
As much as there are probably threats out there, meteors and asteroids, things that we haven't seen yet that might come close, and we might miss them until they're too late, I feel like a planet would be something we'd notice pretty fast.
Yeah. I remember watching, it wasn't The Universe, but it was one of those documentaries on YouTube that would, and it was produced by like the Discovery Channel or A&E or something. And it was saying, if a planet, let's just say this was going to happen as a fun doomsday scenario, here's what would actually happen. We would notice this thing. It would look like a second moon coming at us, and it would be like Majora's fucking mask. And we ain't turning back time. So it would be bad. In fact, I was actually talking with our friend Kelly last night, but say, well, if it did happen, if you're underground, you might survive. But even then, you're only alive as long as your supplies hold out.
It really depends on what exactly happens with this planet. If it collides with ours, ain't nobody living through that.
Yep, it's going to strip the atmosphere.
The last time a planet hit Earth, we had a moon come out of that. It was enough to completely dismantle the Earth and form the moon.
And it would knock us out of our alignment with the rest of the solar system, which means it would send us hurtling in the deep space, which we could survive.
Or into the sun.
Which
we would not survive.
Yeah,
or
no.
Anyone keeping score.
Yeah, we are dead. You are dead, dead, beyond dead. So the world is not going to end. The rapture, I'm going to say, is likely not to happen. And you should chill out. You should probably still go to work. You should probably still go see Avengers Infinity War. You know what? The world couldn't end after Avengers.
Yeah, just, really. It's got to interrupt everything. Just, I mean, come on.
I just want to see Captain America fight Thanos. I just want this. Just one thing. What do you got?
I have the most Canadian bicycle gang.
Bicycle
gang.
Oh, let's
They're
get on our
bicycle.
Schwins.
The Manitoba Hell's Angels. I'm going to die because I just called the Hell's Angels a bicycle gang. I'm sorry, Hell's Angels. If any of you are listening to us for some reason,
please
you
don't
aren't
kill
a bicycle
Justin.
Gang. You're a biker gang. So the Manitoba's Hell's Angels, they did a very Canadian thing, and after being denied service by a hotel in Winnipeg, they recruited their ranks to go on Yelp and give a whole bunch of one-star reviews to this this hotel, bringing their 4.5-star reputation down to 3 stars overnight.
Wow.
So the Marion Hotel, they've taken it all fairly well. Trying to find exactly where their statement is. We refer to this type of fraud as vandalism, which we define as attempts to post fake negative reviews. We fight fraud aggressively and have sophisticated systems and teams in place to detect fraudsters, as well as strong penalties in place to deter them.
What the hell is the Marriott going to do against the Hell's Angels?
It's not even the Marriott. It's this place called the Marion Hotel in Winnipeg.
You know that picture?
There's posts. The post that says, fuck the Marion Hotel, shittiest bar in Winnipeg. Which, if you've ever been to Winnipeg, is not setting the bar very high.
I apologize to our listeners in Winnipeg.
Yeah, my dad's from Winnipeg. He'd laugh.
But yeah, like, I picture these bikers sitting around like this bucket of blood bar. There's like chairs being broken, sitting on their smartphones. I'm gonna get these motherfuckers.
A bunch of Hell's Angels walk into a Starbucks, order a bunch of lattes, sit around the table giving 1-star reviews on their laptops and cell phones.
Fucking A. Just, like, he's got, like, all these pictures of, like, his biker mama doing all sorts of crazy things, and, oh, there's the Yelp app.
Oh, you don't know who you mess with, man. I'm gonna give you such a bad review. So that's what we have in Canada for biker gangs.
Exactly. You better watch out, man. I'm gonna Yelp you.
I'm gonna die.
Yeah, you are so dead. At least, hey, I got a Hell's Angels guy who likes me. Anyway, we're going to take a drop into Satan's pantry yet again this week. And what do we got? You know what? I'm not entirely sure. So you're going to have to stay tuned to find out, because this was recorded weeks ago.
It might be my last meal.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we open the door to the infernal hells of the grocery aisle. Everywhere you go, there's something you probably are very curious to try, but you say, you know what? It just ain't fucking worth it. But that's why we're here. We've actually had some really good success on this show, so that means it's time to eat the chewable band-aids that we've had on this show and try something I'm quite sure is disgusting, because Alex brought us some stuff this week.
I'm back, and I brought poison.
Oh boy, what did you bring us this time?
Well, this one I cheated and I opened yesterday. I got 2 bags of them. Neither will be coming home with me. I'm going to assume that Lee will eat it, because he's a garbage compactor that'll eat any kind of crap I give him. It is from the brand, the Neal Brothers Foods. Extremely tasty. Yeah, extremely tasty.
Lies.
Veggie's Delicious. It's basically supposed to taste like New Delhi. I'm assuming, like, it tastes like if you lick the floor of any building in New Delhi.
Just, like, open your mouth and walk around for a while.
Oh, fuck, that stinks.
Well, supposedly the smell getting off the airplane in New Delhi is supposed to be very overpowering.
I'm going
to
take my chip. I already know what it tastes like.
Overpowering how? Like B.O. or, like...
Like sewage.
Like Scott, let's take a
but
whiff
also
and
this
find
is
out.
A you have to
smell.
Bit, so.
You have to smell first.
Oh, I know the smell.
Yeah, I figured you would.
Is it good, bad, indifferent?
I'm okay.
You're probably getting the other bag that's been unopened.
There's a. I don't want to say what it smells like.
Oh,
because I'm sure it would be sort of culturally insensitive.
Oh boy.
Smells like an Indian guy's dick.
Just clothes, really. Just,
smells like their clothes?
It smells like their clothes. Like if you were walking into a hallway of Indian folks.
I know what you mean. It smells like herbs.
It smells like herbs and spices.
It smells like I stuck my head in the spice bin at the Bulk Barn.
Yeah.
It's not terrible.
Surprisingly, that's where I bought it.
That's not where I thought that was going.
I'll take a handful. I'll live dangerously.
Handful?
Yep,
sure.
I have.
Okay.
This tastes more like the haggis than the haggis one did.
Doesn't smell too bad.
No, it tastes way better.
I had a neighbor that cooked
this
stuff that smelled like this all the time when I was a kid.
It cost $2.50, and you're getting it all.
Yeah, man, I'll snack on that business.
All right, so I'll try.
I like the taste of how certain people smell.
That's the best way to describe it.
I don't even know how to describe this. I mean,
it's the most unique chip I've brought.
From the
I love the texture because they're really crunchy.
Well, I'm going to read what the ingredients are. First of all, nutritional information, we don't need to read anything. It's just chips. It's normal chips. But they are gluten-free for all those freaks out there. Oh, wait, sorry. Not people that are gluten intolerant.
I know a person who actually has celiac.
I didn't say celiac. I said gluten intolerant. Most people that pretend.
Oh, it's gluten-free.
Oh, send your hate mail to me.
So I have a question about the packaging.
Yeah.
Are Peter, Chris, and Vikram Vij the Neil brothers?
I'm going to assume that the guy that looks not like the other two guys that look like brothers is not their brother.
I don't know if I'd call these bad. You know what's weird? I just had about five or six of them. It's not terrible, but there's a burning on my tongue after that. Honestly, a handful is okay. Anything beyond that, I think you'd get really sick of it really fast.
Okay, so now, ingredients, potatoes, sunflower oil, spices, great spices.
A lot of spices. I love how they don't tell you what it is.
But dried cane syrup, maltodextrin, so they add some that's a sugar, isn't it?
It's like a sugar cane, I think.
Salt. Salt's one of the lowest ingredients. But mineral salt and mango, specifically, so there's a mango flavor.
Garrett can't have them.
No.
Which is fine. I mean, you wouldn't feed a child poison anyway, so. But yeah, it's, where is it made here? Is this a Canadian? Oh, yeah, Richmond Hill.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I think these would go well.
Richmond Hill, New Delhi. These would go well as a side to sandwiches.
Yeah, if you had a nice deli sandwich.
And I mean D-E-L-I, not yeah, D. Well, you have
no,
these.
Yeah, it's Del.
Delhi. The Del.
Like a real deli sandwich.
No, it's not.
Like a Reuben.
No, but that's not
deli
what
deli sandwich with New Delhi chips.
Yes, New Delhi chips. Not, yeah.
Because anything more than like 10 or 15 of these things, I think it's overpowering.
It's, well, even one at a time is pretty strong.
I've got to be on like 30 by now.
See, I don't get how you.
See, as soon as you hand something to Lee, it just disappears by the end of the episode.
You don't weigh like 1,000 pounds.
Well, because you eat like I used to eat when I was like almost 700 pounds.
I kind of peaked. I peaked at like 300, 320.
Well, I mean,
I can't wait till your metabolism catches up to you.
321.
Go get him, Jabba.
I kind of want to just keep force feeding you gross, weird international food until it comes through your pores and you burst.
That's a melting pot.
So basically, one poison from Alex. Is it a poison, Tristan?
I like it in small doses.
Okay, so it's not a poison.
Small doses for me. They're not terrible.
Plug it into my veins.
Wow.
Okay, wow. So we have a poison and a extremely positive reaction.
I'm very surprised. I was honestly expecting more like the chewable Band-Aids, but luckily this week we
don't.
Well,
don't worry.
One.
Next time I'll bring something crazier.
Ugh. All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of Satan's Pantry. Stay tuned, where I'm sure one of us will eventually vomit on this show.
We eat weird crap, so you don't have
one
to.
One day I will bring that haggis in a can, and we will puke.
Back into the can for the next person.
It's as dry as a fucking camel's asshole in a fucking desert storm.
Okay, Alex here. Now, it's been a weird weather weekend. We've got freezing ice pellets that have basically closed down the city and province at large, to the point where the police are saying that if you go into the ditch, you're going to be picked up on Monday. I'm recording this on a Saturday. So it's going to be a weird spring summer. And in such an event, I decided I'm going to go binge watch the new Lost in Space show. Now, I had never seen the original show. Now, admittedly, I have the show on Blu-ray. I'm going to get around to it eventually. But the pilot for this version of the show, the 2018 Netflix show, is based on an unaired pilot that they had made for the original show back in the 60s, I think 1965. Now, they decided to go with a more adult, mature-themed show, closer and more reminiscent of, I guess, the 90s movie, which I also did not see because I got that movie confused with Galaxy Quest. Too many movies were the same in the 90s. And after watching the first two episodes, which serves sort of as a long, extended pilot movie, It's pretty solid. There's some issues with, guess, some of the villain in it and some of the tropes that are standard, but the family dynamic is very well handled. The kid actors are great. You wouldn't suspect them to be, you know, the age that they are. The boy is age appropriate. The middle daughter is, I think, the age she's supposed to be playing. And the older daughter, well, I think she's like 22 or 23, playing an 18 or 19-year-old, but she looks close enough. The special effects are out of this world. I have not seen a show that has this good special effects that isn't on HBO itself or a theatrical movie. The sound design is great. I've listened to it all in surround sound. It has an equally epic score, which is perfect for the show. The directing is fantastic, especially on the first couple episodes, which are directed by the gentleman. His name escapes me right now, but he's the guy that's going to be directing the new Hellboy franchise. And as far as the final episode, it's directed by David Nutter, who's known for directing pilot episodes of sci-fi shows and getting things greenlit. So he's done episodes of Smallville, Supernatural, Space Above and Beyond in the 90s, and a whole bunch of others. So that was handled very well. The story arc, I'm not going to spoil it, leaves you... The whole season is basically there to set up the whole Lost in Space aspect. And it ends on a cliffhanger that I'm assuming is going to lead into a second season, because I can't see people not watching this enough to get at least a second season. And it opens up a much better premise, I believe, and it's going to be a much more dark and foreboding than what we had so far. So they set up the first 10 episodes to be the family dynamic and keeping the characters from the original show and switching them up a little bit. And I would say it's definitely worth a watch. So I'd say binge it, at least watch the first two episodes, and then decide from there where you're going to go. They're the strongest, I say, pilot in a very long time that I've seen for a sci-fi show. It doesn't really, it's not going to be your Battlestar Galactica. It's not going to be that style of show where it's very mature and dark, but it's sort of a happy medium. There aren't a lot of family-based sci-fi shows out there outside of Doctor Who, so I think this is going to be perfect to fill the gap there. All right, back to you guys.
Thank you, Alex, for that review of Lost in Space. You can see that currently streaming on Netflix right now. Now, hopefully you have enjoyed this flavored show. As you heard, I've been using bumper music from Coast to Coast AM, and I hope that's kind of given this a little bit of a flair of Coast to Coast. Like I said, truly going to miss Art Bell, but we've talked about a lot of cool things on the show. We've talked about the bicycle gangs of Winnipeg.
I don't want to die.
We've also talked about Far Cry 5. We talked about Billy Mitchell being the scumbag du jour. And loot boxes. Don't fuck with them, because the FTC will come and get you.
When you say random, you better mean random.
Exactly, bitches. There's a dictionary. Use it. So coming up on the show this week, we will have usual Alter Geek and Future Imperfect with Steve Megatron Phillips. I think we talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 2, what we see, what we want to see, what we don't want to see coming up on that. You can find that on geekcastradio.com as well here on thisweekingeek.net. Be sure to comment on the episode post below. We do love getting feedback on those. As I know, Star Trek is a huge passion project for Steve. We've also heard Altered Geek, or I bitch about gaming for about 20 minutes in microtransactions and mobile gaming. I don't get it. And I'm trying to think of what else is coming up this week. I think that's pretty much about it. We're going to be recording more Cambridge Chronicles.
Woo.
So be watching. What's it called? I think it's called, what's our Twitter again for that?
Dice Chronicles.
I think it's Dice Chronicles, yeah, on Twitter.
The main Twitter is Dice Warriors for Terrible Warriors, but I believe Dice Chronicles is our offshoot for the Cambridge Chronicles.
Yeah, so be looking out for that as we continue in the deserts of Antioch, as we find out what's going to happen to our adventurers. As well, we had a pretty major event happen last game. So
No spoilers,
but it was pretty cool, and I was pretty proud of it. So. Yeah, so hopefully you have enjoyed the show this week. I have enjoyed putting it together, such as it has been. So until next time, loyal listeners, we have been
Mr. Christopher.
I've been your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, from the Kingdom of Guelph in the County of Wellington. Until next time.
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in a bit of a f-
ropey thick window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me lucky tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at ThisWeekInGeek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.